Hit Parade, starring Frank Sinatra.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
And now, smile a while with Lorenzo Jones and his wife, Belle.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing them yourself.
This is the Golden Age of Radio. I'm Dick Bertel, and tonight we'll take you on another audio excursion back to radio's formative years. You'll hear the programs that made the era golden, and meet people who made those broadcasts a reality.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by WTIC and Cromwell Savings Bank, corner of Main and West Streets in Cromwell. Here is your host, Dick Bertel.
Good evening, and with me once again is radio collector, historian, Ed Corcoran. Well, Ed, our guest tonight is perhaps the most famous voice not only in radio, but in cartoon land.
That's right, Dick. Probably every cartoon on a Saturday, you'll hear his voice in there somewhere, as well as the ones in the motion pictures, so he's very famous in that regard.
We're talking, of course, about Mel Blanc, and you had the opportunity not only to meet Mel, but to interview him in California recently.
Yes, I made a trip out there, and a friend of mine mentioned that he had a school for people learning how to do voice impressions. And I looked him up in the phone book, and I called him up, and he said, come on out. And his office is in Beverly Hills. And my impression of Beverly Hills is like Jack Benny's impression, you know, kind of a big West Hartford-type community. Mm-hmm. But actually, the downtown area is loaded with big buildings, and his office is in one of the swankiest buildings in town, a very, very luxurious office. And he's in the advertising agency business at this time.
Well, of course, he was very warm and cordial to you.
Oh, yes, he was a great guy, and he has a little bit of a limp. I guess he was hurt in an accident a few years back, and he has a cane, but otherwise he's in great shape and a wonderful guy to know and to meet.
Well, shall we meet him?
Let's do that, Dick.
Me. What's up, Ed?
That's just one of the many voices we're going to hear tonight from this very, very famous entertainer, and I thought we might do a few things just in the regular voice to put your whole career into perspective. You're from San Francisco originally, is that right, Mel?
Yeah, I was born in San Francisco. I'm one of the few native California sons.
Yeah, there must be a few of them around. There's millions of people living here, but you're one of the exceptions that you're actually born.
Well, you know, it's very odd that very, very few of the people who live here were native sons. They all come from various other parts of the world. They kind of like California after they get here.
I was wondering, you know, what was your first chance or the first thing you did in show business?
Well,
now?
I was always crazy about show business, Ed. I loved vaudeville, and I used to entertain the kids at assembly, and they'd always laugh at me, and the teachers would laugh at me and then give me lousy marks. But I had a lot of fun in grammar school, and then eventually I went to high school, and I wanted to play in the band. I had been taking violin lessons for about 8 years, and I wanted to play in the band. They don't use a violin in the band, so I took up the next closest instrument, a tuba. It's a sousaphone. And I played in the school band, and then I played in many orchestras up in Portland, Oregon. But my first radio job was when I got out of high school. This was in 1927. Give you an idea how old I am. And the first job was with a charitable show called the Hoot Owls in Portland. Now, this was on every Friday night, and it was charitable in that people would call in and say, we know some people who live down the street who need some food and some clothing. We, in turn, would get the message and send it on to the Sunshine Division of the Portland Police Department. They, in turn, would fix up a package of what these people needed and bring it out to them before they had to go through any red tape. And it was very helpful to these people. And this program went on for many years. It was called the Keep Growing Wiser Order of Hoot Owls. Keep Growing Wiser was from the call letters, KGW. And I finally became a member of the degree team. I was the Grand Snicker. And then there was the Grand String Bean, who was Harry Granite, and the Grand Screech, who was Charles Berg, and very many other men on the degree team. And this program went on every Friday night for years. I know that a lot of listeners, even here in Connecticut, will remember it.
Oh, yes, sure. I'm sure. I don't know, Lux Radio Theater and some of these other shows. Did you do your voices at that time, or did you just
not too many. I just did maybe a couple of dialects, a Yiddish dialect and an Italian dialect and Swedish, whatever they needed. But I finally went to San Francisco, where I was made director of the road show. It was called the Road Show on NBC. And from there, I came down to Los Angeles and couldn't find work down here in Los Angeles or Beverly Hills or Hollywood, which is all combined, you know. And so it wasn't a total loss because I got married. And just before I got married, I had an offer from Portland to come back there and do a program called Cobwebs and Nuts. And I did this Cobwebs and Nuts, wrote the whole script 6 nights a week for 1 hour a night. And this went on for 2 years. And finally, I was working 16 hours a day. My wife said, what do you want, a nervous breakdown, or you want to go back to Los Angeles? I said, let's go back to Los Angeles. So I did.
Did you continue with radio, or did you... Wasn't it the cartoon area, I guess, that you really had the most difficult time cracking into it when you first started in this business?
Yes, well, you know, this Cobwebs and Nuts taught me so many different voices, different dialects and various things, that I went to... It was then called Schlesinger Cartoons, and I tried to get an audition there. In fact, I went there every 2 weeks for a year and a half, and this man in charge said, no, we don't need any voices. We have all we need. And I kept coming back and said, look, won't you at least listen to me? He said, no, we have all we need. Well, finally, this guy died. So I went to the... Don't laugh now. It's not nice.
No, it's not funny.
No, but he died, and I went to the next man in charge. His name was Treg Brown. Treg said, sure, let's hear what you have to offer. And I auditioned for him, and he got a big kick out of it. And he said, would you do it again for the directors? I said, no, I'll be glad to. So they called the directors in. There was four of them there. And I auditioned for them, and they enjoyed it very much. And one of them said, can you do a drunken bull who had eaten some sour mash? So I had to think fast, and I said, of course I can do a drunken bull. Where's that sour mash? So he said, great, great, what are you doing next Tuesday? And I thought for a moment, I was doing a darn thing, truthfully. I said, yeah, I think I can make it all right. So that was the first job I got in the cartoons.
Was Porky Pig one of the first characters you ever did?
Yes, he was. Porky Pig was born in 1937. They wanted a real, something to sound like a real pig. So I say this as a gag, but I went out to a pig farm and wallowed around with the pigs for a couple of weeks. And when I found out how they would talk, I went back to the studio. They threw me out and said, go home and take a bath, which I did. And I came back and said, if a pig could talk, he'd talk with a grunt. You know, oink, 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 oink.
That's why Porky Pig got a voice with a grunt.
That's him all right.
Then, of course, the next picture they showed me was that of a little rabbit. This was in 1938. They said, he's a tough little character. See, they always show me the character first and tell me what the story is going to be. They said Porky was a little timid guy, so I made him timid. And Bugs, I said, was a real tough character. So I tried to think of the toughest voice in the United States. Was it Brooklyn or was it the Bronx? I thought, why don't I combine the two?
So that's how I got the voice for Bugs Bunny, Doc.
No way.
You know, you stinker.
He's marvelous. Does he take on the characterization of the person he's trying to portray?
Yeah, the face changes as long as the voice. That's right.
Oh, that's marvelous. I want to hear from Mel Blanc, and we'll do that on the Jack Benny Show. He made so many appearances on the Benny Show, and we'll do that right after a word from our sponsor.
Get growing. Get growing. You can count the difference when you're growing.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Unexpected financial needs arise in everyone's life at one time or another. The folks at Cromwell Savings Bank understand this and are ready to help you meet your needs, no matter how large or small. Auto loans, personal loans, or educational loans can all be arranged quickly and easily by Cromwell Savings Bank. They're open Monday through Wednesday, 9 to 3, Thursdays, 9 to 5, and Fridays, 9 to 7:30 p.m.
You grow more with us.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Cromwell Savings Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender located at Main and West Streets in Cromwell.
Well, Ed, let's call on Mel Blanc to go to work for us, and we're going to hear an excerpt from your collection right now.
Yes, this is one of his many characterizations. It's a little different than Bugs Bunny or Porky Pig. This is a French accent where he's Jack Benny's violin teacher.
Oh, marvelous.
No, Monsieur Benny. Please, tune up the violin. I will make the A on the piano. No, you are flat. Pull the string up a little tighter.
Okay.
Tighter.
Oh, darn it, the string broke.
Good, that's one down and three to go.
Well, you better put a new string on, Professor, while I open the window. It's kind of hot in here. There.
Hey, Stevie, kick it to me, and then I'll... Look, there's Mr. Benny in the window. Hello, Mr. Benny.
Oh, hello, Joey. Hello, Stevie.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Say, Mr. Benny, some of us kids are going to play football. Can you come out and play with us?
Oh, gee, I can't, Joey. I got to take my violin lesson. But I'll maybe a little later.
Okay, we'll wait for you.
Mr. Benny, you better close the window. It will be quieter.
Okay.
Here's your violin. We will start with the piece I gave you last time. What was it again?
The glowworm.
Oui, monsieur, the glowworm. It is very pretty. Commence.
Okay.
Monsieur Benny. Monsieur Benny, it is such a small worm. Do not kill it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll take it again.
Mitchell Benny,
huh?
What are the blink blinks?
I'm stepping over the worm.
Mitchell Benny, leave the jokes to the comedians.
Yes, sir.
Perhaps we better limber up a little more with the exercises.
As you wish.
Play it softer with emotion. Dip your bow in Jergens lotion. Nero played while Rome was burning. Right now for a match I'm yearning. No, Mr. Benny, you are sounding worse than ever.
But, Professor, I've been practicing 2 hours every day.
How can you stand it?
What?
Now, look, that is enough of the exercises. Let us go back to the lesson. This time, get the tempo right. We will use the metronome.
Okay.
Tick-tock, tick-tock. Mr. Benny, what is that?
Eastern Columbia, Broadway at night.
What is that?
A Polly's Burlesque, Main Street at 6.
Oh, oui, oui. The third girl from the end with the red hair. Ooh, la, la.
Professor! Professor LeBlanc!
Excuse me. I hope you will not say anything to my wife.
Your wife? Why?
She is the third girl from the other end.
Oh, she's the one with the... Oh, your wife! Well, anyway, Professor, let's get on with the lesson. I want to go out and play football.
Oui, oui. Commence.
Oh, wonderful memories from the Jack Benny Show. What was his name? Professor LeBlanc?
Professor LeBlanc. Actually, Jack can play a lot better than that.
Yes, I guess he can. But that was always the key to the comedy, the fact that Jack Benny couldn't play the violin. Well, let's get back to Hollywood and your interview with Mel Blanc, Ed.
Well, we went along for a few minutes, and then I asked him if he ever kept track of the number of cartoons he made during his career.
I haven't actually kept track, but I tried to figure out one day how many actual cartoons I made with Warner Brothers, Schlesinger, and Hanna-Barbera. I used to work for Charles Mintz and Walter Lantz, and I figured I've done over 3,000 motion pictures for these people.
Never had your face shown once in that whole time.
No, right? That's right.
Did they ever use you as a caricature for any of the people you try to mimic on the screen at all?
No, they didn't. But this Treg Brown, he would always take pictures of me doing a different voice. And finally, one day I said, "Why do you always take a picture when I do a different voice, Treg?" And he said, "Mel," he says, "I have to tell you this. You look exactly like the character you're portraying." So I thought for a minute, and I wondered how I would look like Woody Woodpecker, which I created for Walter Lantz in 1937, I think it was. And, you know, Woody's the one that says, And I thought I couldn't look much like a woodpecker, but he said, your facial expressions indicate what the character is. So, anyway, getting back to the Warner Brothers cartoon, Schlesinger sold out to Warner Brothers. And Jack Benny had heard these Warner Brothers cartoons, and he called me in one day, and he said, "Mel," he says, "I've got a bear at my vault, that guards my vault. He says, can you growl like a bear?" So I said, "Sure." He said, "How would it sound?" I said, "Like this." He said, "Good, you're on next week." Well, I did this for 6 weeks, 6 months. That's all I did was the growl of a bear for six full months. And finally, I said to Mr. Benny, "You know, Mr. Benny, I can also talk." Well, he laughed. He said, "I'll have the scriptwriters write something in for you." So they did, and that's what I've been doing ever since, these various voices.
There was one script that I think we remember very well, when you played a part of a kind of a Mexican. You remember that one?
Si.
I think it started out like Jack Benny or someone said to you, "You come from Tijuana to play in my band, is that right?"
Si.
And you brought that bass fiddle all the way with you from Tijuana?
Si.
What is your name?
Sai.
Sai?
Si.
Is that a lady you brought with you?
Si.
What's her name?
Sue.
Sue?
Si.
What does she do for a living?
So.
So?
Si.
There's only about 10 lines of dialogue in the whole thing, but it seems to be very popular.
Well, I understand that because of your virtuosity on the violin, that's why you were chosen to be Jack Benny's violin teacher, is that right?
Oui. I taught Monsieur Benny the violin, but he plays so badly. And I say to him, "Please, Monsieur Benny, take the ball and chain off my foot. The lesson is over. Let me go home."
But he never would pay you, would he, when you want to go
no,
home?
No, never pay me.
How did you get the money out of him after a while?
Oh, he finally squeezed out a couple of bucks.
I think the most famous thing you did, at least to my recollection on the Benny Show, was the old Maxwell. And this used to bring the people into big jolts of laughter. You recall how that went, that routine?
Well, I'll tell you how that happened. You know, they usually had a record that played the sound effect of the motor dying and stopping. But at this rehearsal, I saw that the plug wasn't put into the socket for the electric phonograph to play. So before I had a chance to tell the sound effects men, it came to that spot. And I did it orally, and it sounded like this.
Did he ever get the car started ever?
Very seldom.
That was really one of the most famous running gags in all of radio, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Car. And then also his parrot, you know. He got a hold of a parrot that couldn't talk. Or if it could talk, it couldn't come in on cue, so I had to do the voice for that. And one of the lines was,
"Maybe the cheapskate, maybe the cheapskate."
You do other animal voices without the actually dialogue at all, or is it all you try to do both?
Well, normally I do the voice actually before the character talks to indicate what it is. This is like a little dog would say.
I'm a little dog, and this is the voice I would give to him.
And a bigger dog would be a bigger bark. Yeah, I'm a big bulldog. All these little sounds fit in with these various characters. One sound, I might tell you, Jack Benny was supposed to be visiting Epsom Downs in England, the horse races. And the scriptwriters always tried to throw me with something. They tried to put something in that I couldn't do. And this time they put in, Mel Blanc does an English horse whinny. Now, how can you tell a nationality of a horse, you know? So I didn't say anything, and I waited till it came to that spot, and I did an English horse whinny that sounded like this.
Well, I guess the Benny was, that was probably your most exposure in all of radio, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, yes.
Network and everything?
The beauty of radio is the fact that you could do more than one voice on television where they see you. You have to more or less do just one character. You hear my Westminster chimes in the background? I'm a watch and clock collector, you know, mostly watches. I just threw that in, folks, in case you got the old watches that you want to get rid of.
You'll find a nice home out here. Of course, besides the Benny program, you had several shows in which you received star billing, and one of these was Point Sublime.
Yeah, that's right. Point Sublime was a local show out here, and I think it went transcontinental for a while for an insurance company. And this is the one in which I did Mooney. That's the little fellow that worked for Cliff Arquette, who was the lead in the
Charlie
program.
Weaver.
Charlie Weaver, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this went on for several years and was very popular.
Yeah, I like that. That was the kind of the stuttering type voice, wasn't it?
Well, he was Mooney, the guy that he worked for Charlie. He swept out the joint.
Yeah, that was done in a couple of cartoons, wasn't it? That same voice, your recollection?
Well, yes, they sped it up a little bit and made Porky out of him.
Porky,
yeah,
was,
it was Porky was his voice. In fact, that same voice was used for the Sad Sack. During the war.
I have a couple of those recordings of the Sad Sack.
Mm-hmm.
And you did that about the same way you did the Point Sublime.
Yeah, very similar to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's marvelous to hear Mel recalling these stories and the programs that we're talking about. And you must be a Mel Blanc fan, because you certainly had no difficulty in finding material for him.
Well, I've been collecting it for some years, and I might comment that how wonderful it was that he could make those transitions. You know, many actors, before they can do a voice or a character, they have to warm up or, you know, get themselves prepared, but he could go into them almost immediately.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised he did so many in such a short time.
I know, and his voice is just so flexible and marvelous. We'll hear from Mel Blanc as he broadcast on the air about 25 years ago, right after this message from our sponsor.
The Golden Age of Radio is being brought to you by Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Get growing, you can count the difference when you're growing.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
In days of so much uncertainty, security is welcomed by everyone, especially financial security. The folks at Cromwell Savings Bank suggest that a growing savings account is one of the best means of ensuring financial security, and at Cromwell Savings Bank, you'll grow more with any one of their four savings plans. So begin to plan for tomorrow, today, by opening a savings account at the Cromwell Savings Bank, located at Main and West Streets in Cromwell.
You'll grow more with us.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Cromwell Savings Bank, member FDIC, open Monday through Wednesday 9 to 3, Thursday 9 to 5, and Fridays 9 to 7:30 p.m.
Our guest tonight on the Golden Age of Radio is Mel Blanc, and this is Dick Bertel along with Ed Corcoran. And Ed, before we get back to Mel's interview, I want to hear from the Mel Blanc Show. Now, when was this on the air?
This was right after World War II, and he played a straight part, and then he came in later with several of his voices. So I believe it was on about 2 years, and it's the only show I know that he was, you know, actually the star.
All right, here's Mel Blanc.
Colgate Tooth Powder presents the Mel Blanc Show with Mary Jane Croft, Joe Kearns, Hans Conried, Earl Ross, the sportsman, Victor Miller and his orchestra, and starring the creator of the voice of Bugs Bunny.
Yeah. What's up, Doc?
Yes, Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and teeth that sparkle brings you the Mel Blanc Show with Mel playing his new character, Zookie.
Hello, everybody. Hi.
Starring himself in person, Mel Blanc.
Hi, folks. Ugga, ugga, boo. Ugga, boo, boo, ugga.
Indian summer night in Mel Blanc's little town. The spirit of romance is in the air, and the courting Casanovas are buying favors with which to greet their girlfriends. In the florist shop, Sam Brown is saying,
"Here's $5. Give me the best orchid in the place."
And in the sweet shop, Henry Jones is saying,
"Here's $10. Give me the biggest box of candy you got."
And in another shop, Mel Blanc is saying,
"I want some flowers and candy for my girl Betty. Here's my money."
"Okay.
Hey, Joe, give this guy 2 daisies and a jelly bean."
So Mel had it wrapped as a gift and presented it to Betty. Right now, we find Mel sitting with Betty in her front parlor, enjoying their favorite pastime, looking at the family album.
"Oh, look, Mel, here's a picture of my cousin Dottie when she was 2 years old."
"Oh, what a cute little bathing suit."
"And here's a picture of her taken 17 years later."
Still wearing the same bathing suit.
"Isn't it awful how little girls wear these days?"
"Yeah." terrible. Dottie sure is...
"Mel, turn the page."
"Okay."
"Oh!" "What are you laughing at?"
"Oh, Betty, who's that stupid anemic-looking character you're standing next to?"
"Darling, that's you."
"What a handsome devil."
"Oh, here's a picture of my great-grandmother in uniform. You know, she served in the Civil War on the southern side."
"What do you know, a Confederate whack?" "Gosh, look at Dottie. I can't get over
Mel,
her."
"Mel, stop going back to that page. Oh, here's a picture of Uncle George Colby and his wife waving goodbye from the ship before they left for France."
"Well, who's that big woman waving back?"
"That is the Statue of Liberty."
"Oh, the Statue of Liberty."
"Yeah."
"Well, well, well."
"Mel, stop looking at Dottie's picture."
"Oh. What's the matter, Betty? You're a little cross today."
"Well, I don't know how to break this to you, Mel, but Father is moving the family away from here."
"Oh, but Betty, what about your father's supermarket?"
"He's found a buyer from out of town."
But where will you live?"
"Well, if the deal goes through, Daddy and he will exchange houses."
"Oh, Betty, we've got to get married right away."
"Mel, you've been saying that for 5 years."
"Well, I'll buy the supermarket myself."
"But you have no money."
"I'll go to the bank and get a loan."
"But, Mel, you have no credit."
"Then I'll get a GI loan."
"Mel Blanc, I refuse to wait another 5 years."
"But, Betty, I may never see you again. I won't let your father do it. I'll burn the supermarket."
"Oh,
I'll..."
"There's some man coming up the steps. I've never seen him before."
"Say, do you suppose it could be the man who's going to buy the supermarket?"
"Well, Dad and I have never seen him, but he's supposed to be here tomorrow. That's why Father went out for the evening."
"Betty, I've got it. If it is the buyer, I'll pretend I'm your father and kill the deal."
"Oh, but now..."
"Betty, I've heard your father yell so often, it's a cinch for me to do it. Besides, I'm a natural-born actor. See if I don't sound like your father."
"Mel Blanc, I'll break every bone in your body."
"But, Father, I mean, Mel..."
"See?"
"Come in."
"How do you do? My name is Billings, Percy W. Billings. I'm here on a matter of business. Is Mr. Colby in?"
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Billings. I'm Colby, and this is my daughter, Betty."
"Your daughter? You look rather young to be the father of this girl."
"Why, she's only 12 years old.
Well, She's a rather mature girl for 12. Oh, you think so? You should see her cousin Dottie.
Father, get away from that photograph album.
I know that I was due in tomorrow, Mr. Colby, but my astrologer told me the stars were more advantageous for our meeting tonight. Aquarius was crossing Pisces, and the best sign for supermarkets is Aquarius and Pisces.
Yes, I've seen the sign, A and P.
Oh, a fellow astrologer.
No, I'm much more concerned with the bumps on the head.
Do you use phrenology?
No, Band-Aids. Now, let's get down to business. Daughter, do you mind leaving the room? Mr. Billings and I have a deal to kill. I mean, to make.
Sit down, Father, but be careful.
Oh, daughter, you can leave the album here.
By the way, I hope I didn't inconvenience you by arriving tonight instead of waiting until tomorrow. The stars, you know.
Oh, that's quite all right, Mr. Billings. Too bad you didn't get here a little earlier.
Why?
Oh, you missed a beautiful fire at the supermarket.
Supermarket?
Yes, everybody in town was there, except Joe Moore, Phil Carr, and Mac Brown.
Was it necessary for them to be there?
Yeah, they're the firemen. Oh, but it didn't matter. The fire went on without them.
But that must have caused a great deal of damage at the market.
What market?
Oh, this is dreadful. I came here for nothing. Something must have gone wrong with my horoscope. I knew I should have had another meeting with my astrologer before I left.
Oh, hello, everybody. I'm home.
Oh, it's you, Mel. Haven't you left yet?
You got home early, didn't you?
Who is this man?
Oh, that's my son.
You've got the oldest children I've ever seen.
Children? Pardon me, sir. Who are you?
My name is Billings. Percy W. Billings.
Oh, I've been waiting for you. My name is Colby.
But this man's name is Colby. In fact, he just told me the supermarket burned down.
Well, so long, everybody.
Where are you going?
To put out the fire.
Mel Blank? Wait a minute, Mr. Billings. I'm Colby. This man is Mel Blank. The market didn't burn. In fact, I'm selling because I don't want my daughter Betty to see this nincompoop again.
Well, I'm confused. There's only one thing for me to do.
What's that?
I must send for my astrologer and consult with him. Where is the telephone?
Oh, right there.
Thank you.
Oh, and Mel, as long as this is your last visit to my house, allow me to show you out personally.
Oh, you don't have to, Mr. Colby.
Oh, yes, I do.
He's so polite. Oh, what a mess. If Mr. Billings consults that astrologer and buys a supermarket, Mr. Colby will move out of town and I'll never see Betty again. Gosh, what'll I do? I wonder if her cousin Dottie has a phone.
That sounds like a great show.
Yeah, I thought it was very funny, you know, and it even gets better later on. I wish we could play the whole thing for you, Dick.
How long was it on?
I would say about 2 years, and then I believe he then went on to, I guess, better things. I think TV took over about that time.
Hmm. Well, let's get back to your interview in Hollywood and Beverly Hills with Mel Blanc.
Well, as I remember, I asked him whether he ever did a situation dialogue where he kind of talks to himself, mm-hmm. and this is what he had to say, Dick.
No, I could do two voices very easily. In fact, I made many records doing changing over the voices. Like I'd be talking in a normal voice.
And then I would do the voice of Pepe Le Pew, you see. Pepe Le Pew is the little French skunk that chased the pussycat and catch her and kiss her. And from Pepe Le Pew, I would go to another voice.
Maybe speeding on jealousy, face mouse on making, I think. Take the cheese away from the can, give it in the mice, I think, see.
Or it might be Yosemite Sam. So you see, I don't have no trouble.
And I can go right in one from one to the other.
As radio started to fade from the scene, did you find yourself a home in television with some of your talents at all?
Well, you know, I was very worried about television, and I didn't know whether I could do it or not, because I had stayed away from motion pictures for so long. I never had time to do actual motion pictures outside of one with Red Skelton. And it kind of worried me, but eventually it turned out okay.
Yeah, you did a lot of Jack Benny television as well as radio.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. You do any other with working with other comedians during that period at all?
No, just one or two others. I more or less kept the comedy for Jack in the program.
Mm-hmm.
See, I did his trained caller, his violin teacher, his Maxwell, his the man who was always the salesman at Christmas time in the department store, and several other voices for Jack.
What was that famous voice then at the railroad station? I think that seems to be one of the most
popular. Yeah, that was the train caller. It says,
train ending on track 5 for Anaheim, Azusa, and Cucamonga.
You know, a lot of people thought those were phony towns, but those are real towns around Los Angeles.
Yeah, I found out after I made a few wrong turns since I've been out here. Well, of course, today, Mel Blanc is a tycoon, I guess, by looking like your sumptuous quarters you have here. And could you tell us a little about what you're doing to pass on this talent to others?
Well, we're passing on the talent in that we have a recording studio right here in our suite. And we make commercials for various clients all over the United States, in fact, all over the world. And by doing that, we use all of the top actors in the radio and television business. And this is my helpful way. And, of course, it doesn't take any money out of my pocket. Puts a little in it. But it's also helpful in keeping all of these artists busy.
How long have you been doing this now, this kind of work?
Well, it's been going on for about 10 years now.
10 years. Yeah. You did have a school at one time, too,
Yes,
you?
I did, but it became too much of a job. It was a little too difficult to handle with all the work that we have here.
Was it teaching your students to do the same kind of thing you did, or would you try to teach them other types of...
Well, I taught, actually, I taught creative voices. All of my other professors were college professors, and like Lorene Tuttle and Peter Leeds, and all of these were on and off camera, Stanley Ralph Ross, and, there's so many of these teachers who, some of them are still in teaching in college, but they took this night to teach at my school. And I, as I was saying, taught creative voices. I would give a picture to a student and say, I want you to give me a voice for this next week. Think of what the animal looks like, what kind of a sound he makes, and try to think of a voice that would fit him. And I gave one fellow a hippopotamus. I said, now give me a voice for this next week. And he came back, and I said, have you got it? He says, yes, I think I have. I said, what would he sound like?
Well, I think a hippopotamus will sound something like that.
I said, no. I said, you're making fun of a hare lip. That's not right. A hippopotamus is a great big thing. He's in the water, and he's big, and he's heavy, and he should have a watery voice, and he should sound something like that. He says, hey, that's pretty good. I said, thank you.
You've been doing it all your life. Well, we talked before we went on the air that you don't imitate other people, but a lot of people imitate you, don't they?
That's right. You know, there's no law saying that you can't imitate anyone in this country. And I don't know. I think a person that does a voice should own it. It belongs to him. That is outside of people who make their living out of doing impersonations and impressions, like Rich Little and guys like this. Well, this is their business. This is the way they make their living. But I think just to take a guy's voice and not even say who it is, and just to use that same voice on another character, this is stealing a voice from a person. I don't like that.
Yeah, they did that, wasn't it, in the Yogi Bear series?
Yeah, that's right.
And Bert
Lahr objected to it, and he asked them to stop it. They wouldn't stop. Finally, he wrote to the union, to the American Federation of Radio and Television Artists, and told them that's the only way he made his living. So the union actually wrote to these people who were doing it and said, look, this is the way Bert makes his living, and if you want somebody, get Bert. So they finally stopped doing it.
He did the Frito-Lays, didn't he, before he passed away? He did, I think, win out because he actually did those commercials himself.
No, I did the Frito-Lay commercials.
Well, there was one. He was on camera that he did.
On camera, maybe, yeah. No, I did the, what was the name of the little guy? The Frito Bandido.
Sí. But he talked too much about bandidos, the Mexican people made them take him off the air, I think.
They took offense not to the dialect, but to the word bandido, which I don't blame them for. Because everybody would classify a Mexican as a bandido, which is wrong. They, you know, these are real people just like we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a wrong impression, but I didn't write it, and I just had to say it to earn my money.
Will your voice be heard now by the audience in any particular area?
Yes, on Yellow Pages. I worked with many people, such as Milton Berle, and Oh, very Southern, very Southern.
Yeah, it was pretty
comments.
Funny. I heard that one the other day.
And then every time you hear somebody holler raid real loud, that little bug is me. And most of the parrots are me. I don't know why. But I did a parrot...
Because they can't do anything on cue, that's why.
I did a parrot routine for the Ford company out here. And, various other things. I can't even think of all the commercials that I do.
Mm-hmm.
But they're a lot of fun doing, and they pay good residuals, so I like them.
It's fun hearing Mel Blanc talk about radio commercials and mention the word residuals. That's so important.
Yeah, are you getting any residuals, Dick, on your work at all lately?
No. As a matter of fact, I don't think I've ever received a residual, but it might be fun to try it sometime. He was speaking just a moment ago of parrots, and, of course, he did the parrot, as he explained, on the Benny Show, and I'd love to hear the parrot again. Do you think that might be possible?
Well, yes. As a matter of fact, I do have an excerpt where the parrot does have a few words to say, Dick. Shall we listen to it?
All right.
Mildred's fears. Oh, boy, that was a dilly, wasn't it?
Say, Jack, that sounded like Larry Stevens.
Yeah, probably one of his records.
How you feeling now, boss?
Oh, just about the same.
You want me to get some more ice?
No, I got plenty.
You want me to call the drugstore for some more medicine?
No, I got plenty.
You want me to call the Red Cross for some more blood?
No, I don't want to wear out my welcome. I guess I'll be all right if I rest.
Oh, by the way, boss, a telegram just came for you.
Who's it from? Read it, Mary.
Okay. It's from Fred Allen.
Oh. What does Smellbound have to say?
It says, Dear Jack, just learned that you were robbed of $10,000. If you find the dirty crook that did it, please let me know, as I would like to have him as a guest star on my program.
Hmm.
We'll do the broadcast from San Quentin if necessary.
What a smart aleck. I can't wait till I do my next broadcast so I can beat into that Mildred Spears joke. Mildred Spears, that's a goodie. Yes, sir. You know? Rochester, answer the door.
Answer the door.
I heard the man! Dog, that parrot sure gets on my nerves shooting off his mouth. I wonder if a Mickey Finn works on birds. Oh, well. Oh, boss.
What is it, Rochester?
There's a detective here, and he wants to talk to you alone.
A detective?
Yes, sir. Here he is.
Oh. Did you want to see me, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Benny. I'm Inspector Flanagan. Hey, you was robbed Saturday night, so they put me on the case to ask you some questions.
Oh. Well, come right over here, Inspector, and sit down by the bed.
Thanks.
It must be tough for you to follow anybody. Now, what do you want to know, Inspector?
Wait till I get out my pencil. There. Now, where was you on the night of June the 23rd?
June the 23rd? What's that got to do with it?
I don't know. We always ask that question.
Oh.
Now, this mug what stuck you up, what did it look like?
Well, he had one cauliflower ear, his nose was broken, a big scar across the right side of his face, and a large mole on his chin.
Any identifying marks? Look, Mr. Benny, one more thing. Thank you.
Oh, excuse me. Hello?
Hello, is this Benny?
Yes.
Now listen, Benny, if anybody's there, don't let on who you're talking to.
What?
This is the guy that stuck you up.
Holy cow.
And I'm calling to warn you, don't say a word, see?
But look,
hey, have any cop has been nosing around asking you questions?
Well, yes. In fact, there's one here now.
What?
I said there's one here now.
Well, you better not tell him what I look like or anything else. You do, I'll fill you so full of lead you'll need 35 pallbearers.
35? My goodness, I only have a few friends.
So remember, keep your mouth shut, Benny, or your life ain't worth a plug dime.
Yeah, well, thank you, thank you. That's a deal. It's nice of you to call. I will. Goodbye.
What was that?
A friend of mine called to cheer me up.
I thought I heard you say that's one hand now.
One here now?
Yeah, what was that?
Oh. Oh, that was my Chinese laundry man. One here now. You know, he's got that little place on 3rd.
I thought Greenberg was on 3rd.
No, look, this is Main and 3rd.
Oh. Well, I got all the dope I need. I'll be getting along now, Mr. Perry.
Just a minute, Inspector. You know, that description I gave you of the bandit wasn't exactly accurate.
No?
No, I remember now. He didn't have a mole on his chin or a broken nose or a scar. In fact, this mug, he looked a lot like Roddy McDowell.
Oh, well, I gotta go, but you can rest assured, Mr. Bennett, and I'll be on the case day and night.
Well, don't work too hard, Inspector. Goodbye. Oh, what an awful mess I'm in now. All because I dreamt I won a $646,000. Oh, well, I gotta go through with it.
We had about three or four different voices in there for Mel Blanc, didn't we?
Yes, he was a detective, and he almost broke Jack Benny up, which I've never heard done on the air. He never did crack up, but he came very close.
We'll hear more from Mel Blanc in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsor.
Get growing. You can count the difference when you're growing.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Need a car loan to take advantage of those end-of-season price tags on new automobiles? Then see the folks at Cromwell Savings Bank. They'll help you purchase that new car quickly and easily. And if a personal loan is what you want, they can arrange that too. In fact, Cromwell Savings can help you with all your financial needs because they're a complete family banking service. See the friendly, accommodating folks at Cromwell Savings Bank, Main and West Streets, Cromwell.
You grow more with us.
Cromwell Savings Bank of Cromwell.
Cromwell Savings Bank, member FDIC. Open Monday through Wednesday, 9 to 3, Thursdays, 9 to 5, and Fridays, 9 to 7:30 p.m.
You know, there's one character that Mel created that we haven't heard from tonight.
Yes, that was the sad sack. He mentioned that earlier in the show, and I have an excerpt with the sad sack and with Joey Brown, who was very, very famous in both radio and the movies.
All right, let's listen.
Boy, am I in a jam now. Two gals on my hands and only one job. Well, what to do?
Hello. Captain, Major, current, Jen, private sad sack.
Is that so? Well, Sack, what are you doing in town?
Oh, I'm on an important mission. It's imperative that I see. It's a matter of life and the life and the which way is the nearest pool room?
Hey, Sack, how are things going in the Army?
Oh, we wonderful. I just got to promoted to G2.
G2, is that so? What is that, intelligence department?
Garbage, second class.
Well, my boy, what have you been doing on your pass,
Oh, the usual thing. I've been to the museum. I've been attending the lecture. I went to the opera. looking at girls.
Oh, boy, that's good fun. I know all about girls. Many's the times I've peeked in the windows at the YMCA.
the YMCA?
Yes, yeah, sure.
Why, there's nothing at the YMCA but men.
What's the difference? I'm nearsighted. That's good. Yeah, you know, it's a lucky thing for me that you came by, Sack. You see, I'm a real tight squeeze here.
Tight squeeze? Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm a little short this week myself.
No, wait a minute. I mean, I'm in a tight squeeze with two girls.
Where can I get into a jam like that?
Oh, wait a minute. You don't understand. I have to get rid of one of the girls. Now, what would you charge me to take one of them off my hands?
Well, that will cost you $10.
$10?
Yep, or I'll take both of them off your hands for five.
Gosh, for a buck and a half, this guy'd clean out Earl Carroll's. Well, I have to keep one to be my beauty editor. Now, come on into the next room and meet the girls.
Oh, boy, lead me to them. When it comes to girls, I'm an eager beaver.
That's so. You look like an anxious wolf. And come on in now, and don't forget you're supposed to fire one of them. That is in a nice way, of course.
Oh, don't worry. I'll be a subtle as well. They'll never suspect. I'm a smooth operator. I'll throw her out on her ear.
Girls, this is Sam Sack. Sack, this is Lucille Ball.
The Lucille Ball?
Yep.
Yes, Jackie, darling.
And this one over here, this is Cass Daly.
The Cass Daly?
Yep.
Yes, Jackie, darling.
Told you now, Sack. Only one of these girls can stay.
Well, which one would you rather have stay, or are you nuts?
Come on, Sack. Either one of them. Hurry up about it.
Okay. Well, I'm awfully sorry, Miss Ball. But I guess you'll have to.
Sacky Wacky, you great big handsome wonderful boy.
I'm awfully sorry, Miss Daly, but
what did you say?
I said I'm awfully sorry, Miss Daly, but you'll have to.
What did you say?
One of you is definitely fired.
Yes, but which one, Sack? Who's fired?
You!
Get rid of him. Okay, well, it's time to say goodnight, I guess, and perhaps we should wind up our conversation with Mel Blanc.
All right, Dick. I think right toward the end I asked him if he does come east to visit us, and I asked him whether he's ever been to Connecticut before or not.
I've only passed through Connecticut a couple of times, but I loved it very much, and I'm going to go back there someday.
Well, I hope you do, and if you do, we'd like to welcome you to the studio.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll do this again, huh?
Thanks very much. I will. And may I call Porky over to say the farewell words?
Yeah, why don't you do that?
There Porky, come on over here and say goodbye to him.
Thanks. That's all, folks.
The Golden Age of Radio with Dick Pertell and Ed Corcoran has been brought to you by WTIC and the Cromwell Savings Bank, corner of Main and West Streets in Cromwell. The Hollywood portions of tonight's program were recorded by Lloyd Nesbitt. Studio engineer was Sam Malleus. The Golden Age of Radio was produced by Dick Pertell and Bill Grasty.
Pepper Young's Family. The story of your friends, the Youngs, is brought to you by Kame, the mild beauty soap for a smoother, softer complexion.
Rinse so white and rinse so bright.